and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. On today's episode, we have with us David Snoke, a physics professor at the University of Pittsburgh in the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and also a fellow of the American Physical Society. Dr. Snoke has been on the podcast before discussing various other topics, but we have him today with us to discuss a new peer-reviewed scientific paper he published in the journal Biocomplexity titled Systems Biology as a Research for Intelligent Design. So, Dr. Snoke, thanks for coming on the show with us.
I'm glad to be with you.
Well, I really enjoyed reading your paper and studying up on the topic of systems biology as we did a little review of your paper for Evolution News and Views. And so I want to congratulate you on this really important paper that I think brings out a topic that needs to be talked about more in intelligent design. So basically, your paper was about systems biology and intelligent design. Could you first explain for our listeners what exactly is systems biology?
Okay, well, systems biology is a field of biology that's actually been around for a while, at least a couple decades, and generally is the approach of looking at how different systems in the biological world interact. And so you might distinguish that from a really microscopic view where you might be looking at just one protein interacting with one other protein and trying to work out exactly how that works. Systems biology takes a step back and looks at bigger systems and really is looking at how all the parts interact with each other. And it's evolved over the years, but it is essentially explicitly following the paradigm of systems engineering. Systems engineering is a field of engineering that's been around for a while, which takes a similar approach with systems that we know are designed, ones made by people, where, again, instead of working on just the parts, the individual machines, you sort of take a big step back and look at how systems interact and try to optimize how those systems work and so on. So systems biology is explicitly taking paradigms from systems engineering and trying to apply them to the biological world.
So what got you interested in systems biology, Dr. Snoke?
Well, a couple things, actually. I've always had some interest in biological things, but what made me aware of it was a couple of different things. One of them was actually a talk by Princeton physicist Bill Bialik, who came and gave a symposium, a series of talks here at the University of Pittsburgh. And he's someone who is coming from the physics world and has been engaged in biophysics, biological problems in the last few years, and gave several talks in which he made a case that struck me like it was an intelligent design talk. I mean, if he had been coming from the Discovery Institute, there probably would have been people booing him. He was just talking about how amazingly optimized physical systems are, using a bunch of different examples, for instance, bat hearing and so on, which are essentially as good as they possibly can be, given the physical constraints. So the time resolution of a bat's hearing is something like a nanosecond, and essentially it can't be any better given the physical constraints of air and so on. So actually talked with him a little bit after that, and I was saying, so how is this different from intelligent design? And he didn't laugh in my face. He said, I get that question a lot, actually. And his viewpoint is that evolution has just been so darn successful that it's optimized everything nearly perfectly. And evolution may be done, may have optimized everything. There may be no room for improvement. Well, following that, I went to, there's a national meeting, APS March meeting, which they have every year. And I started going to biophysics talks, which are also included in this conference. There was just an amazing sense of excitement about the new things going on in systems biology. And, you know, actually, I have to say, physicists for many decades have thought about life systems, but it's not always been clear that we have a lot to offer in terms of whether physics thinking helps in biology. And typically, physics is associated with starting from the microscopic and working your way up, a sort of reductionistic approach. And that's not been very productive over the years. And there's some biologists who will just say reductionist physics is not helpful to biology. What Bill Bialik and other people have been doing in interacting with the systems biology world is explicitly starting top down and saying, let's apply optimization type thinking. And rather than reductionist, really starting from the top and saying, what is this for? What would make it good? What would make it optimal? And thinking in that framework. And so in many ways, it's more what we would call an engineering approach than a physics approach. If you think historically, physics always tends to be reductionistic, find the smallest part and then work your way up. And this is the way of thinking of starting from the top and seeing how that plays out.
It's funny, Dr. Snoke, you mentioned how you asked the speaker at your university who was talking about systems biology what he thought of ID. And if he'd been an ID proponent, people might not have listened. We were just having a conversation here at Discovery yesterday about how there's many arguments that people can make where you've got two people making the same argument. One's an intelligence design proponent, one's not. And if it's an intelligence design proponent, they don't want to hear it, people don't want to listen. But otherwise, the argument's perfectly reasonable, and otherwise, people are perfectly willing to listen to it. So it's kind of funny how that works sometimes.
Yeah, actually, that's really true. I mean, even the paper I wrote with Michael Behe way back 2004 or something, where we made this argument about it being nearly impossible to have three or four independent mutations within reasonable amounts of time. I was at another talk, I think it was at the APS March meeting, where a fellow from MIT was making essentially exactly the same point. And it was totally uncontroversial that simply saying, you know, the timescales don't work out for that to happen. So yeah, definitely who is saying it matters.
Well, now that you have published a paper about systems biology in a journal that's sympathetic to intelligent design, I think that this is probably the worst thing that could happen to systems biology, right? I mean, nobody's going to want to take it seriously now.
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the things in the paper that I put in is some fun quotes of people who they seem to recognize the problems. I mean, the system biology people use design language all the time. They talk about the purpose of things. They use teleological language. That word teleology means looking for purpose or goals, and pretty freely say we are applying design principles. We're looking for the way these things are designed. And so every now and then they feel like they have to apologize. So I put a few of the quotes. There's one very long quote, which I won't read, but there's another one in which the person actually writes and says, we're going to apply design principles, and then in parenthesis, with no implication of their being an actual designer, of course. So I think they do recognize that they're using a lot of design principles and design language, but as long as they say the right things that, well, of course we know there's no actual designer, then they can get away with it. Now, what I do in the paper is I basically make the argument that nevertheless, the fact that they are using design principles is at least not a problem for intelligent design people. It would be something that would be highly consistent with the intelligent design approach, even if people want to argue that there really wasn't a designer.
Yes, Dr. Snoke, you definitely talk about how systems biology is very consistent with an ID approach, even if people don't always realize it. It probably flows right out of an ID approach. So you in your paper list various features in biology that have been found to function like goal-directed or top-down engineered parts or systems, and those features were discovered largely through systems biology. So before we get into too much of your argument, can you take us through some of these features of biology that have been discovered by systems biology?
Yeah, and one of the things I want to emphasize is we're really talking about real physical concepts here, not just language. So there's been for several decades, going back to the 70s, people like Dawkins saying, well, things appear designed, but their argument is that, well, that's just colorful language that people are using, so that when people say the score or how it's designed, that it doesn't actually have any physical implications. But what I'm arguing in my article is that it's not just language of design that's being used, but it's really design concepts. And so there's a whole bunch of them. I can't really summarize all of them. But just for example, feedback is an engineering thing that's used where you have a part of the signal which is fed back into the original signal. That's used in biology all the time. Thresholding, where you have some kind of a cutoff for a minimum thing that will trigger something, and then you alter the value of that threshold depending on your conditions. You have oscillators, you have clocks, you have signals, you have addressing, you have information storage and readout, you have redundant systems, you have hierarchies where you have subtasks which are bundled into packages. So these are all things that are familiar to engineers, and these are things that people are finding in biological systems. And essentially, systems biology, what they did was they took the approach of, let me think like an engineer, so let me actually look to see if maybe these things are going on in biology, rather than assume that it's kludgy and junky and things are just happening randomly. And so in a very real way, the way that people are doing systems biology and so on is, starting from the top, they look at a system and they ask what it's for, what is its purpose, which is already a design type thing. And then they say, what would be an optimal way of accomplishing that purpose? What's a good way of doing that? Instead of assuming that you have just sort of randomly came to that, let's assume that it's actually doing it as well as it possibly can. And then you ask, all right, well, what trade-offs are going to be involved? If I want to optimize this and I have other functions going on, what kind of trade-offs do I have to make in order to optimize the whole system? And that actually then gets you to some mathematical things, because people are familiar with the mathematics. When you optimize something in calculus, that means that you can set a first derivative equal to zero. You can actually do some math where you assume things are at an optimal condition. And that actually leads to quantitative predictions for a lot of these things. And those have been coming true. So people are actually making mathematical predictions based on this type of optimization assumption. And so it's really not just a nice language. It's really something of leading predictions. Now, just one last thing I should mention. Systems biology is also connected to something called synthetic biology, which you might say is just a combination of trying to reproduce things that biological systems are doing, and also potentially make new functions from biological systems by altering the genes and so on. And in that area, there's a whole lot of what's called reverse engineering going on. So they use the language, they use the term reverse engineering when they write the papers, and they essentially say, we're going to view it as though we've got a master design system from some other manufacturer, and we're going to take it apart to see how it works, and we're going to get good ideas. And so we're not just imposing good ideas, saying, okay, well, we already know what feedback looks like. Let's try to find feedback in biological systems. They're actually doing the reverse. They're saying, let's learn new methods from biological systems that maybe we didn't know before.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time for this first podcast, but stay tuned for more with Dr. David Snoke talking about systems biology and how it relates to intelligent design. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.